Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
To welcome you once again to the Us Lifting Us Thursday night Dare to Win call. Every Thursday we have a very interesting conversation, and we thank you for being with us, and make sure that you pass the word on to your family and your friends to join us every week. And tonight we have another interesting conversation. The topic is, can cryptocurrency free us from capitalistic financial slavery? And we will get started with this conversation as soon as we are the drum finishes. Yes, family, we are the drum calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Again, welcome. This is the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dare to Win is a place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of our people and the imperative that we build a global economic machinery that will free us and contribute to our wholeness. And if you're on internet, you can listen to us by internet or by telephone. By telephone, you can join the conversation with comments or questions at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And press 1 on your keypad when you're ready with questions or comments. Also, you can join us by internet radio, and you can go to www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And when you get to the home page, just look for the gold bar on the right side of the page where it says Ulu Radio, and you click on Ulu Radio, and then you scroll down, and once you click on that, you'll see a globe with the headphones on it, and you click on Listen Live, and that's by Internet Radio. And we're so happy to have you with us, and my name is Brother Thurman. I'm an Us Lifting Us member, and once again, the topic tonight is, can cryptocurrency free us from capitalistic financial slavery? And I'm joined by Brother Shabaka, and Brother Shabaka, give a good word to the family.
Greetings, brother. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, family. It's my pleasure to be on tonight. and to share this conversation. I think it's a very important topic. I hope that you all think so as well and participate with your own views, particularly on the night subject. We like to hear those. This is an examination of my views, probably an examination of Brother Thurman's views on the topic, but I think it's important, particularly as we begin to emerge out of this COVID phase into something that is going to be beneficial to us. So thank you very much, and I'd like to greet everyone to the night's program.
All right, Brother Shabaka, thank you. And yes, I definitely think that the subject of currency is a very serious matter today, tomorrow, and in the for coming, certainly for the throughout this year and beyond, always have been, especially under the system of capitalism. And so once again, family, we definitely want you to join the conversation. And the topic is, can cryptocurrency free us from capitalistic financial slavery? Brother Shabaka, to get us started, with the topic, can you define, give us some definition of currency?
Yes, thank you so much for that question, brother. Yes, I can. I can give you a definition, and anybody can go on to the internet, put the word currency in, and a whole bunch of definitions will come up. But I like to use the one most commonly used, and that is to look at currency in the same way in which we might look at a promissory note. All right, and what do I mean by this? There is different currencies throughout the world. We know that the currency that is used here in the United States and its territory, and in some other parts of the world too, is the dollar. In fact, the dollar is the international currency of exchange. The United States was very good at tricking other countries into that. The dollar is the U.S. currency. All right, and essentially what it is a medium of exchange through which we sort of like make money alive. Now, what do I mean by that? Money, all right, is often categorized as either good or bad, depending on the time, and then what's backing it. Decades ago, money was backed by gold or silver. I know that you probably heard people talk about that. All right. In 1971, President Nixon took us off of the gold standard, and it made currency fiat. Now, what I mean by fiat? Fiat currency is nothing more than the government promises to pay. If it's a promissory note, it's to pay. And the best way to look at a promissory note is that when you buy government bonds, the government will borrow money from you in the form of government bonds, and it will promise to pay you back X amount of years if you don't try, all right, to recover that with interest. So therefore, it will promise to pay you back the money that it borrowed, and then with interest. And usually it has a very serious bond campaign, particularly during wartime. And if you know, the United States has been at war, you know, since its inception. It has never really gotten out of war. So there's always a need for money. So currency and money. If you look at 1 cent, 1 cent is part of the dollar currency. It's a denomination, 1 cent, 5 cent, 10 cent, 25 cents, or a quarter, a half a dollar, a denomination, all right? But it's the dollar that's promised to you by the government, who says that the government, will honor that dollar and promise to pay the value that it extends to that particular currency in the marketplace when there is an exchange. The 1 cent, which is money, will stay 1 cent. The 5 cents, which is 5 cents, will stay 5 cents. The quarter will stay 25 cents. but the currency might change. Now, you might say, well, how is that possible? Well, let me sort of like characterize it as this. If in the world, well, let's say if in the United States you had 10 cans of salmon and you had $10, that's the only amount of money in the United States at the time is $10, all right? And the only goods that you have right now is 10 cans of salmon. All right, on average, I would say that each can of salmon would cost a dollar. But if there is no backing of the dollar by any resource like gold or silver or platinum, all right, and the government decides that it wishes to make more money because maybe the population has increased for some reason, and so therefore it prints its own money without the backing. So now we have, let's say, $20, all right? So as a consequence of printing money, not being backed by anything, where once the can of salmon costs $1, that can of salmon is now $2, all right? Now, the dollar hasn't changed, it's just a dollar. It's the buying power that the currency has, which caused it now to decrease in value, causing the salmon now to cost $2 as before it only cost a dollar. So consequently, there is a difference between currency and money, but money is used to fuel the transaction at the marketplace, you know, particularly as the value fluctuate as a consequence of the currency not necessarily being backed by anything that is stable. Let me stop here, brother, just in case you had another question for me. And I hope that that was a little clear for you from that question.
Yes, Brother Shabaka, thank you. And family, definitely join the conversation with your questions or comments, and you can reach us at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Brother Shabaka, can you you had talked about the difference. You mentioned the difference of the money and the currency. Explain how it is. You started on it, but go further in explaining the difference in how it is different from currency is different from money.
Yeah, let me give another example. Thank you for the question again. As I said, money has its own intrinsic value. $1 is $1. It's not going to change. The one isn't going to change to a half. It's that a penny, which is also part of the dollar currency, is not going to change. It's going to be a penny. It's a coin, unless for some reason Congress decides not to, to mint any. But when the currency was taken off of a standard which was more stable, and I said earlier gold, well, the reason that it was placed on gold, because gold 150 years ago was plentiful, all right? It was inexhaustible, and most of the gold was mined out of Africa, as you well know, all right? But then, you know, you had different colonial powers in the United States competing for dominance in the international trade. Consequently, as in order to get some leverage and some control, if not some superiority within the international trade, what Nixon did in 71 was to take it off of the gold standard. So therefore, you would say, well, what's backing this thing we call the dollar? Because remember now, the dollar, all currency, is to modernize and bring us up from the bartering age. If I have a cow and you got 4 goats or 5 goats or X number of goats and we have to trade, we have to sit there and negotiate how many goats I will get for this cow that I have that you want. All right, we'll see. The currency as a medium of exchange removes all that. All right, it removes all that, and it has the government promises that it will pay as a result of the value that it has extended at this point in time in your negotiation at the marketplace. All right. The $20 bill, if you have a $20 bill, all right, which is in your wallet, all right, that $20 bill at that time has a value of $20 because it's granted by the government, all right, to be used as $20 at that point in time. And you should be able to buy what you need to buy at that point in time. But we know that the $20 bill per se is no more value than the $1 bill. They both weigh the same thing. It's just a piece of paper with some green ink on it. One has one on it. The other one has 20 on it. But the government says that this $20 bill is 20 more times, has 20 more of the value than this $1 bill. Now, remember now, the government dictates that, but you can see if I came from Mars and came down and took a look at it, I would just see a piece of paper with some green ink on it, and probably if I wasn't too clear on what was the pictorial images on the paper, only difference I would see is that one has a 1 and the other one has a 2 on it, but I would definitely conclude that they both have the same value, when in fact they don't because of what the government has said. So, as I said, 1 is 1, 20 is 20, all right, but the value of the paper is the same, so they really don't have any value except for what the government says in terms. And all the government says, this thing with the 20 on it has 20 times the buying power of this thing that has 1 on it. All right, so it has 1 on it, all right, and so, but this thing that has 20 has 20 more the buying power. So if we go back to the example that I used of the can of salmon, if I had $1, I could only buy one can of salmon. But if there is only 10 cans of salmon in the world or in the United States at that time, the bill with the 20 on it, I could buy all of them, even when it might be inflated where it would cost me $2 per can. But the person that has the 1 cannot buy a can once it's inflated and costs $2 per can, even though the value of the paper dollar is no greater than the value of the $20, except what the government says. And the government mm-hmm. dictates that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good.
I yeah, go ahead, bro.
Yes, I get it. The government dictates, as you said. So tell us about how is inflation a form of taxation?
Well, I mentioned that slightly earlier, and inflation is that when the government, with the currency not being backed by something that is stable, all right, and valued and recognized, you know, and preferably recognized internationally, then what it has is that it has convinced its citizens and the world that it is promised to that the currency has this buying power. Now, if it chooses to print more money, but you have a fixed number, in other words, the goods and services within the society do not change, but you're printing more money. That means then that the value of that currency, since you're printing more money and it's not backed by anything that's stable, all right, you're printing more money, so its buying power is decreased. Because remember now, the goods and services are fixed. They're not increasing or decreasing, but you're printing more money. Consequently, when you look at that, so that means then as a person, I'm going to be paying more for my goods and services than I did before. That's why a pound of sugar maybe 15 years ago cost a lot less than a pound of sugar today. All right? Well, that's due to inflation. And so that means then that my buying power has been reduced. Now, if I am a person in the lower socioeconomic realm of the society, obviously, I don't have more of the resources that someone, a millionaire or a billionaire, has. So consequently, the impact of inflation is affecting me a lot greater then the impact of inflation is affecting someone in upper income or who's a who gets their money by not working. So I'm heavily impacted. And the best scenario I can give is when we as African people, all right, became sharecroppers after the Civil War. Well, we couldn't leave. We had no money. We were promised 20 acres and a mule, and we never got it. And so what the landowner did, says, well, I'll divide up this plot, and I'll lease it to you. All right, and all I need you to do is, you know, you go ahead and do what you did 10 years ago when I used to whip your behinds when you didn't produce enough. So now I'm going to lease it to you. That's your land. You can look at it as your land. And all I want is the cotton on it. And so the former enslaved African, well, he couldn't go anywhere. So he took that up. And so he had to borrow some stuff, you know, like clothing, some seeds, and at least some provisions to get through that period of time when cotton was in harvest so that he could plant and then harvest. All right, and consequently, when he went back to the planter and showed him his yield, he always came up short and in debt. And so we had to borrow some money on top of the other money that he borrowed the first time, all right, to get that. So that's essentially what taxation is like. As the inflation increases, my buying power decreases, all right, and it's like being in debt. It's like a college student who pays $50,000 so that he or she can get so-called educated, all right, and then comes out, try to find a job to pay off that debt, but that debt is accumulating interest regardless of how small it is. But $50,000, any small amount of interest on any $50,000 or more dollars, it's still accumulation. It's getting much. You can't pay that off right now. And so what the college student finds themselves 10, 20, and maybe even 30 years down the road, longer than what you would pay on a mortgage house, still find themselves in debt. That's the same thing as the sharecropper, never getting out and never being able to create the necessary wealth, all right, which will be the manifestation of power as it is represented in this country. Economic power and wealth is the engine, all right, that demonstrates and illustrates your economic power. Because I'm constantly being taxed, so inflation, for me, keeps me in a cycle of constant debt because inflation, all right, is always decreasing my buying power to the point, all right, where I find extremely difficult to get out of the socioeconomic situation that I'm in, and in some cases, which have been the cases, some people end up into an underground economy in order to try to make money, all right, and consequently get involved with the law, and a consequence of that, they go to prison. So in that sense, the increase inflation creates for us, which the increased inflation now is at the dictates of the federal government. And as a consequence of being at the federal government, it creates a tax. And maybe I needed to give earlier the definition of a tax. We define a tax as a compulsory contribution to the state revenue levied by the government on workers' income, business profits, or added to the cost of services or goods and the transactions which we are involved in nowadays. So therefore, when you take and look at the inflation, which is government sanction, on our ability to buy, so that means in my buying power, even though I'm working, my wages don't go up, but my buying power goes down, so that means money is essentially being taken from me. Well, that's a tax. Whenever money is being taken from you, in the case of buying power, which means I can't buy that 1 pound of sugar that I paid 15 years ago with the same amount of money now. But yet at the same time, I'm not making that much more than what I made 15 years ago. So in that sense, the government has instituted a mechanism by which they can constantly keep you in debt, while at the same time in constantly keeping you in debt and then reducing your buying power, making it very difficult for you to attract and gather wealth, which is necessary in the expression of power, economic power in this country, in the world, as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, brother. Well, family members, make sure that once again you can join the conversation at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad. We're going to take a quick break, and we will come back and continue with this very vital conversation. Thank you, family. We welcome you back. We want to continue the conversation. And remember, we're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And tonight the topic is, can cryptocurrency free us from capitalistic financial slavery? And every week we have a variety of topics, but most all of them have a connection to our financial situation one way or another. Brother Stibaka, as we continue the conversation, among the things that comes up is you're talking about currency and money, taxation. When it comes to currency, should you store your wealth in currency?
Yes, brother. Very good question. Because of the, as I call it, fiat currency, which is a currency that is backed by the government, but it's not backed by anything. The government says, "I'll promise to pay you." All right. So that means that when you get to the marketplace, and it's $20 on there, and you want to get something that costs $19, the government says that it's all right to accept this bill because I can guarantee that it can pay for that item that costs $19, and you get some change back. If we had to, and this is where we get into a discussion of wealth, or I should say assets, or the accumulation of things that really represents how well we are doing in the society. If you have cash, if you have currency, all right, it is good to take those currency and try to invest them in things that are stable in value. All right. Most preferably, it would be good to take the money that you have instead of putting it in a savings account in the bank, you know, and getting a half or a tenth of a percent interest. All right. It's better if you could put that into some business. Which you have investigated and know to be profitable, all right? Because what's in that business? That business is composed of machinery, land, equipment, property, what we call real assets, all right? Real assets. And we would like to put them in those things that are real assets that appreciate in value. Now, what do I mean by appreciate? Well, we know that if you get a car, I don't care if it's a Lincoln Continental, a Rolls Royce, or whatever it is, as soon as you take it off the lot, it depreciates in value. Some of them don't depreciate as fast as others, but it depreciates in value. But even that is better than because you can sell it. You do it right, you can sell it and can sustain value, all right, as opposed to losing your buying power as a consequence of inflation rising so rapidly. So things, businesses use things and they appreciate in value, which means they increase in value. At the very least, you would like them to appreciate greater than the rate of inflation. All right. And then what I mean by that is this. If inflation is, let's say, 3%, you got $100. If you don't have yourself $100 invested in something that's going to give you $3, all right, then you begin to lose money because what was once cost $100 now costs $103 because there's 3% inflation, all right? So you want to be able to have, at the end of that period, $103. If you only have $100 because what you invested in didn't appreciate at the rate of inflation, then you're paying, all right, you're going to be paying more money to get what you once paid for $100. You have to have three more dollars. All right, so we'd like to get those things that appreciate. Those things that appreciate are those resources that you can, that are, we call assets and appreciable assets, which means possibly they're in use and they increase in value. A machine increases it, what it creates, the wealth that it creates from a machine increases in value, particularly if it's profitable. So therefore, if I have a printing press, all right, even though the printing press, because of the wear and tear on it, may decrease in value, I've been able to use that printing press, all right, for my business to derive revenue and eventually profit, make it and profit from that printing press. So that's the kind of things that we would want to have, machinery. So that's why you invest your things in money, in businesses. A lot of people put their money in stocks. Well, the stocks supposed to represent businesses because they assume that certain businesses are going to do well. For the long term, that's right. Some businesses do well. But I find it more advantageous to put money into businesses that I have examined and that from my own examination seem like they're going to do well for a while in the market that they are in. So therefore, you have to do a little bit of examination. You can't necessarily go unless you got somebody that can advise you on what does the environment look like in the area, what does the business look like, and how well do you think that it might do. All right, so money into businesses, that's good because businesses have property, they have plants, they have equipment, they have land, which is always valuable, particularly productive land when you can take that land and make use of it. Buildings, fixtures, and vehicles. All of that is good money, but putting it into a savings account ain't gonna do it.
Thank you, brother. And I like the way you explain that, and I definitely appreciate your approach when you answered about in terms of storing your wealth, and a lot of people would have been more readily talked about the stock market, but you gave us a greater understanding in terms of the business and the assets that's connected with the business. Family members, you can join the conversation by dialing in at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your phone keypad when you're ready with a question or comment. Brother Shibaka, are we you just finished talking about storing the wealth and the currency. How is what you've talked about so far, how is this tied to capitalism? And give us a
very
brief definition of capitalism.
Yeah, a very good question, and I'm glad you brought that up. I want to try to just, you know, we could go and talk about capitalism for days. We've had, I guess, in the last 2 months, a number of programs on capitalism, so I'm not going to get involved that deeply, but fundamentally, capitalism is a socioeconomic system in which the means of production and distribution are privately owned or corporate owned. And what fuels that or fuels the operation is the profits that that particular business or the private entity generates as a consequence of that. An example of a capitalistic enterprise that we usually don't think about, the prison system inside the United States, all right, is operated by private companies. And so they're not operating it for justice. They're operating it, you know, in order to make money, okay? So when you see on the news sometime brothers and sisters, but mostly brothers, all right, in jail for 10, 15 years, and eventually there's a program that proves that they were unjustly in prison, convicted. The prosecutor's holding up evidence which would have exonerated people. Well, this is why, because see, you can't, if the prison system is there privately operated, well, the private enterprise that is managing that prison system is making money from managing that prison system. And in order to have a prison system, you have to have prisoners. All right, so, and we are, what, 13%? Well, no, black males make up, what, 7% of the U.S. population? And we make up close to 50% of the prison population nationally, 7%, and then nationally. So you get an idea of the amount of exploitation that takes place inside this country, all right, to make sure that prisons are profitable. And then, of course, the prisons will contract the laborers out to different businesses, and they make a profit because they pay the laborers, you know, $1 or $2 a day. And sometimes they even make the laborers, the prisoners, pay room and board to just stay in there. So capitalism is essentially a socioeconomic system, all right, by which we have production and the distribution of what we produce. The currency that we had talked about earlier is nothing but the lifeblood of any economy. It's the lifeblood of any economy. And an economy is essentially how a society is organized in order to feed and clothe itself. All right. And the currency provides a mean of exchange for conducting commerce. You know, that's what the currency does in any system, but particularly in a capitalistic system. All right. And commerce is nothing more than buying and selling or conducting trade in exchange for goods and services between businesses and entities. Interestingly, in the United States and in Europe as well, in fact, throughout the world, the banking system is centrally controlled. Now, what does the banking system have to do with the currency? Well, they hold the currency. They manage the currency inside of any economy. They manage the currency and the monetary policy of the state. In fact, in 1913, the Congress abrogated its responsibilities and gave the Federal Reserve that power, which was endowed to Congress. All right, and the Federal Reserve is privately owned. The banking system is privately owned, and it's controlled by the Federal Reserve. And since it's controlled by the Federal Reserve, we say that it is centrally controlled. So we have a central banking system. And the problem with that central banking system, that institutionally it is not dependent on public interference. I mean, the chairman of the Federal Reserve once in a while will go on Congress to say how things are, but he doesn't have to invite anybody from Congress to their meeting. Their meetings are closed, all right, to anybody. The president, although there's some interesting rumors about what the president may or may not have done regarding the Federal Reserve. They said he was able to single-handedly put the Federal Reserve back under the control of the Treasury as a consequence of the Federal Reserve getting a fund manager, one of these fund managers, global fund managers to manage his affairs, but that person happened to be a personal friend of Donald Trump. But that's rumor. But, you know, I like to follow up rumors sometimes. So we find ourselves controlled by a central banking system. That banking system provides the monetary policy and management of the currency of the country. And the currency is the lifeblood of the capitalistic system that we currently live in. So obviously, the central banking system is part of the capitalistic structure. Brother, I hope that addressed a little bit of your question. If you know, you have one you want
yes.
to follow up through, I'll be very happy to do that.
Yes. Well, I appreciate, and I hope the listening audience is definitely taking notes, because we need to know about these things and how it's being operated. We did temporarily had a caller on the line. I don't know if they still have a question or comment.
Mm-hmm.
I had just a minute. Caller with the last four numbers 1111. If you still have a question or comment, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Hotep. Can you hear me?
Hotep, brother. Yes, brother. I
changed my mind because it wasn't very related. But since you mentioned the prison system and it's privately owned, do you think we should get rid of the prison system? That's my question. So that's why I drew it back, because it wasn't related to today's topic. But that was my question.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Well, brother, thank you for that question. You know, everything that we do is related. The prison system is part of the capitalist system. It's a continuation of, for people of African of descent, it's a continuation of the enslavement or slavery. So, yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be there. In fact, they are, right now, they are what we call reparation groups that are, even though they attempt, all right, I can applaud their attempts, is to reform the system such that the disproportionate number of blacks that we see relative to their population, all right, is taken into consideration, and that they should be given, reparation, repair, compensation for being unjustly imprisoned because of the private interests of these businesses that are running them. Yeah, so I can say, yeah, we need to do away with them. We need to get out all our people who are political prisoners who are thrown in prison, primarily because they spoke out about the injustices of the country. So we should do that. All right. But for tonight, I think I'm in agreement with you. But I wanted to show how that was tied to the currency, and then eventually, in the next minute or two, to show you how it's tied to the economy that we hope to create, and where instead of having the fiat currency, we have a cryptocurrency, all right, and how that cryptocurrency would fit well within the desire that we're trying to create. But thank you for the question, brother. I hope that I answered it. I'm in agreement. It's an unfair system. It shouldn't exist.
I agree. Brother Shivaka, you just mentioned other things that you are going to get into that you're ready to talk about tonight, and we do have another caller on the line. You tell me with what you have on your agenda. Do you want to take this call, or do you want to wait?
Let's take the call.
Okay. All right, caller with the last four numbers 1555. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your question or comment.
Yes, my name's Rick. I'm calling from Chicago. And my question is, first of all, in terms of some of these corporations and whatnot, or I guess I might just say in terms of the whole idea of blacks policing themselves, do you think it might be advantageous, because since we do have predators amongst our own communities, to start our own prison system so that we can administer justice in a more fair and ethical way.
Well, thank you so much for the question, and as an interesting question, I think that I sort of like follow the dictates of Dr. Claude Anderson. He says if you can build a strong economy, then everything else that you consider fair will materialize. In other words, you have a strong economic base, all right, and that will dictate the judicial system, the prison system, the educational system, the health system, which you in turn can make fair, all right, but it has to come from your hands. And I'm somewhat in agreement with that, is that if we build an economy, all right, that represents the needs, because remember now, our participation in this economy is causing us to be no more than what we were after we got off the plantation. You know, we've been struggling and had to develop what they called an underground economy in order to at least get some survival monies, but in turn was heavily policed, which made us nothing more than an avenue which puts us into the prison system, which is the slave system, a continuation of the slave system. All right, so I'm saying if we have the economic strength, then we can dictate the politics coming from our community. We can build the schools. We can support the religious institution, all right, so that it becomes a little bit more meaningful instead of being trapped by the 501c3 in which they can't speak out and sort of like narrow into what they can and can't say about injustices happening inside of their neighborhoods. So I'm all for, yes, doing it ourselves. I don't think we should have some system, all right, that deals with people when they fracture, making fractions against our community. But right now, I think the best answer that I can give is that let's get this economy among ourselves, and that will bring about the justice where we now see injustice in our system, in this system.
Here in Chicago, that is a problem right there. In some areas, you got businesses, again, as usual, in a lot of these different riots or what have you over the years, you have some businesses that put up black on and get spared, and you have some that aren't. And so in Chicago, month or so ago, you had sort of a similar situation, but even the other non-owned businesses that were damaged, and some of them still closed down, the people in those areas, particularly who don't have cars, are suffering. So what I'm saying is that even in terms of building up our economy, we have to deal with that whole situation, which alienates businesses from a community, and that is the those, as you said, who commit infractions or violations against us. And so much of the protest going on now with Black Lives Matters leaves out the self-policing component. It's just totally absent from their whole agenda. You had some people out in, I think that was Portland, who had basically, I guess, captured a police station and wasted, I guess, a whole month, gathering in front of it. And nobody ever said, well, I don't know, if they were going to go in there and then figure out that, I mean, the whole concept never came to their minds that maybe we should police ourselves if we don't like the way they're doing. So I'm just saying that's, seems like the, other than the Nation of Islam, which got some acclaim for going into troubled communities back at, in days gone by, there's some articles out about that. One specifically is entitled, "The Nation of Islam Could Be the Savior for Chicago." You can Google it and check it out. And they seem to be the only ones who at least made a serious effort, which even the Christian church black church should have been involved in, but wasn't, you know, but anybody can learn from it and try to seriously pursue that goal, because you're never going to really get anybody else, particularly white, to police you. You're going to have to eventually face up to the fact that we as men got to man up and police ourselves. You can't, you go on to the year 3000 whining about, well, he hit me upside my head, this, that, and the other. Oh, my five-year-old daughter was sleeping, got shot. You know, so, but, you know, that we have to accept some of the responsibility on ourselves. Even if you don't get rid of the local police force, you don't have to be totally dependent on them doing all of it. Over here in Chinatown, there's one more point. Over here in
Go ahead, say that.
Yeah, I was going to say over here in Chicago, in Chinatown, doing all that turmoil, nothing happens. You know, none of their youth or teens are running around tearing up Chinatown, and they got the triads and the tongs over there who ain't going to have it anyway. So they policing themselves. So that's the same in San Francisco, New York, Chinatown, and these other communities.
Thank you so much for the question, brother. Yeah,
okay,
and as I said, yeah, thank you. As I said earlier, we have to control the economy. If we don't control the economy, then, you know, we can't even self-police because we don't have no funds. All right, and that brings, I guess, bring you to the point that I was raising about how ULU, which is us lifting us, all right, can provide an avenue to address some of the things that you're talking about, because it would bring us all in as a community under one umbrella, or at least under an umbrella, all right, for economic development. Now, how does it do that? Now, remember the topic of our discussion, we haven't said very much about it, is this cryptocurrency. And let me just say something briefly about that right quick, you know, before we get off the air. Cryptocurrency is currency that is basically generated on a computer. All right, it's called decentralized currency. What we have right now, when I talked about earlier, the Federal Reserve and the central banks, all the money goes through them. They act as a third party, so that everything goes through them. They regulate the money. They even regulate who you can send the money to sometimes. All right, cryptocurrency is revenue, or I should say not revenue, but currency that's generated on a computer. The computer is hooked up to the internet, and it's not centralized. Right now we have a centralized internet operating system. Well, now what do I mean by that? You have a computer that you have in your house. It is connected to a server, all right, and the server acts as the processing agent for information that you derive, all right? So everything, you know, when you go shopping, you know, when they talk about the cloud, they're talking about the centralization of computer servers that take the information, process it, and give you back. Well, you have to give up a lot of information. You give up a lot of information when you start typing in that computer. What cryptocurrency does is that it's an algorithm, all right, that generates X amount of currency, cryptocurrency, and it has a limit. In other words, central banks, excuse me, print. They constantly print and it inflates. Well, see, there's a limit on cryptocurrency, and it's on computers that are hooked up to a peer, what they call peer networking or processing system. So therefore, the algorithm could be on my system. It generates, you know, how much money I can or how much currency I can get. A lot of people, you heard of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is supposed to be one of the more known and sometimes popular, but there's other cryptocurrencies around, and such that anything that I transact is unknown. I don't have to give my birth certificate, my name. I don't have to do an eye retina scan, fingerprints, and all that other kind of stuff that you have to do with central system, because they want to know where the money is and who the money is coming from. All right? I don't have to do that. It's anonymous. All I have is an account, and the algorithm that is generated, you know, indicates how much money or currency that I have in my account.
and that it also informs the vendor, you know, whether I can transact depending on what the price is of the item I wish to exchange or buy, sell, and what have you. What makes it good for Ulu is this. Ulu is a cooperative. We are a business. I want you to, you know, solidify that into your mind. We are a business, but we are a business that's set up other businesses. You know, you have Ulu, the mother, and then you have secondary businesses, which is businesses that cover all of the economic stratas that affect economic activity in our communities and in the world. Now, keep this in mind, all right? What would make, and remember now, we're not just setting up businesses. Our whole objective in the setting up businesses is to try to make people of African descent non-dependent on systems that have exploited us for decades, for centuries. Obviously, utilizing the currency of the exploiter doesn't help that. But developing a currency that we can exchange among ourselves, among our co-ops, if we got co-ops in Nigeria, we got co-ops in Chicago, we got co-ops, you know, in L.A., we got co-ops, you know, in Harare, in South Africa, South Central Africa, all right, then how do we economically engage in activities, all right? Remember now, we are subject to the currency of the country that we are in. But if we can bypass that, then we set up an economy among ourselves, all right? We trade, and we set up because of the equality that we have in setting up the rules, all right, we set up how we would like these things. So that makes cryptocurrency extremely attractive, you know, because it's peer-to-peer. There's no centralization. Transactions are done anonymously, all right, and it allows you to be able to do it. The internet is global. Ulu is global, all right? So Ulu is global. Internet is global. We have nodes which are nothing but computers are global. Consequently, we can generate a global currency that fits our needs and benefit our community without a continuous dependency on the fiat currency, which is backed by nothing, and that can continuously be printed, you know, by the government, creating inflation, subjugating our people to go out and do what the brother in Chicago was having, crimes. And brother, some of those crimes are done by people who are bringing, and they're not. When you get a chance, look real deeply at these demonstrations, because remember, some of these demonstrations have been going on for 3 and 4 months. Black folks do not have that kind of means to be able to fund demonstrations that's been going on 3 or 4 months. And then tell the people where to demonstrate. All right. We might be out on the front line, but the back line is being funded by some other kind of people. All right, so we have to look at that too. Yeah, too, people are angry because we've been brutalized by that. The Nation of Islam, as you said, is rightfully, they helped us. The cops, because I was in the Nation, the cops came down. It's not only in Chicago, it's in Baltimore, it's in Philly, it's in D.C. The cops came down on the Nation here when they were trying to patrol housing projects here, all right? And they kept the drug dealers out, they kept the prostitution out, they did all of that stuff. And then the cops jumped on them and started arresting some of the members. So I understand exactly where you're coming from, but there's a lot of stuff that we don't see from people that are funding activity to create some of the chaos that we see so that the police can be out there to say that they can justify being out there because of the crime that's being committed by these demonstrators. Brother, I know I got off a little bit, but let me turn it over to you. I saw that the time is, and I wanted to get that in.
Yes, Brother Shivaka, you were making it more and more interesting. You've done a very good job, and you tied it into how that cryptocurrency could give us what we need to be able to operate worldwide. And we definitely thank you for it. And we got more callers on the line, and we could spend another hour or so. We just didn't have that planned on the program reserved that tonight, but you've done a very good job, and I'm sure without being able to have the time to take these other callers that are on the line, but we've got to continue this conversation.
Can I add this before we go? Yeah, we're going to have, you know, topics like this. Ulu is opening up an academy. The academy will open up next month, and topics like this, cryptocurrency, the economy, the state of affairs, health, a lot of other things, businesses. How do we conduct businesses? How do we research businesses? How do we set up businesses? All right. How do we interact with communities? How do we interact with the black businesses that are there? How to help organize the black businesses there so that we become, I guess, what people would call a chamber of commerce or something like that that benefits us and not necessarily the European powers. Yeah, we're going to be starting those academies. Just stay tuned to our website, which is www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. Or, brother, you got the call-in number that they can also use?
Yes. The Ulu office number is 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. And you can also reach us by email at info@usliftingus.com, info@usliftingus.com. And so the callers, we wanted to get to you, but any questions you've got, you can just email us at info@usliftingus.com. And also the Ulu Academy that Brother Shabaka mentioned, it will be on our web page, and the web page is under it's being redone, and also it'll be posted on the Slipping Us Facebook page. And we thank you so much for being on the call, family, and Brother Shabaka. We thank you so much. You definitely taught us a lot and gave us greater clarity that we very much need. And we'll be back here next Thursday with another topic. And thank you so much for joining us, family.
Talk about the ghetto right on from here. Yeah.